Welcome to the Supplement Engineer Podcast. My name is Robert Chinetsky. Joining me today, we have the co-founder of Beam, Mr. Mike Udell, and flying co-pilot on this special episode of the Supplement Engineer Podcast, my Polish brother from another mother, Lukas Rytkowski, Prometheus Intelligent Sports Technology. Welcome, gentlemen. How are each of you doing today?
Thank you guys so much for having me.
And Thank you for being a part of the show, Robert. I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Lukas, thanks for brokering the introduction with everything. And Mike, people know who Lukas and I are. And for those that aren't familiar with you and your backstory, you know, anytime we have a first-time guest, I like to get kind of like the full treatment. So walk us through everything, how you got started up with Campus Protein, the founding of Beam, and all of those things.
Love it. Yeah, so let's rewind over 10 years ago, which is hard to believe. We were just talking about this, but I went to Indiana University where I was in a fraternity with my best friend. He was in another fraternity and we ended up going to GNC every weekend and got to a point where we're just like smart business guys would be buying this stuff and selling them to their brothers in the fraternity. We ended up doing that, then turned into a business. That business became Campus Protein. Then we started expanding to other schools, Boston University, where my third business partner went to. And we started to realize that this was like a legitimate business model. This was a market that was untapped, and quit our jobs after college. I studied fashion. I had a job at Ralph Lauren. I lived at home for 2 years. Wow. And grinded through building and starting this company that we had no idea was going to be successful. And we started realizing that we can really be building this brand and expanding. And that took us into 2016, 2017, where we decided that we wanted to take it to the next level. And we didn't know really what that was. So we raised funding, raised money to kind of create this idea that we had, whether it was more hires for Campus Protein, whether it was a private line for Campus Protein, whether it was a private line that was completely separate from Campus Protein. And we can go into this in more detail, but the summer of 2017, while we were developing all these ideas, I actually ended up getting sick. And I had to kind of take a step back from building Campus Protein and worry about my health. And we can elaborate on that in the near future. But it ended up becoming my story, which became the foundation to my next venture, which is Beam Be Amazing. And it's completely separate from Campus Protein. It's only sold on youcanbeam.com. And it is a high-end premium supplement brand that is really tackling things that I've been aware of in this industry for the past 10 years. And also, it has so much more than just supplements, from the story, from our products, but extremely important to me is our philanthropic DNA. And we want to leave this world a better place than when we found it. And we want to give back and we want to make this place amazing. And that's our motto, is to be better. So quick synopsis of who I am. I started a supplement company in college. I've been in the industry. I've seen a lot of brands, a lot of success stories, some brands that are not here today. We call them the Hall of Famers that have shaped the industry that don't need to be here today. But it's been an incredible ride, and I'm so happy to kind of continue it with all these new ventures that we're working on.
With Campus Protein, how did you guys, I guess, go about expanding it? Like, you stumbled on the initial idea, and then what steps did you take? Just because we have a lot of like early brand owners that listen to us, in addition to consumers. So, like, what steps did you take to actually grow the business from where you started with just the three of you guys, and gradually, you know, grew it into this massive internet retailer now?
Yeah. So our motto is by the students for the students. So it was one of these things where that motto translated into the way that we ran it. So, for example, I was technically the first college rep, even though I owned it, even though I founded it, I was selling to my friends. I was like-minded. I was living their lives. I was partying on the weekends, probably also during the week, honestly. I was barely going to class just like them, but I was working out all the time. So the way that I thought about it is just like, I put myself in their shoes and I realized that this was a model. I was in a fraternity. I had access to 75 other guys who are living the exact same life for me. So what I did was I networked and I built the rep program at Indiana University first, then Boston University with my business partner, Tarun. And then we realized that everybody knows somebody from high school that went to somebody. So we started networking and that's how we built our rep program. And for anybody who's starting a supplement line, college students are extremely difficult to work with in the best way possible. They're just not like normal adults. So to understand that, I think would need another college degree, which is ironic. But my experience and working with them has been an absolute pleasure. But that is the foundation. That is the core of our business because it's those voices that align with our demo, our customers, that give you that peace of mind, that assurance of like, okay, this person knows what they're talking about and also lives the same life as me. It's kind of the core of Campus Protein and our experience.
Yeah. You went to college for fashion and you worked for 2 years at Ralph Lauren. Did those, this is a podcast first. First off, I've never had anybody that went for fashion or worked at like a major apparel company. So let's dig into that a little bit. This has nothing to do with supplements, but we're going to work our way. So, you know, we can end cap with anything that you learned from your time there. Has any of that translated over into the supplement industry in any form or fashion, pun intended?
Yes.
But yeah, let's go through all of that.
So I actually got kicked out of the business school because I failed calculus 3 times. Math is not my strong suit. Retail math, I'm decent at, hence profit margin and all that.
There we go.
But so I kind of had to take a step back and figure out like, what did I want to do in life? Like what do I find like a passion in? And the passion is like, when you think about bodybuilding, you are changing the way your body looks to build confidence, to almost have an identity, a unique identity for yourself to kind of on a superficial level show to other people. Mm-hmm. And the way that I looked at fashion was, okay, so when I wear this shirt, I'm saying something about myself. And I really aligned with that. I thought it was also advantageous to be a male in that industry. So I was thinking about that too. So while everybody was pulling all-nighters in the library, I was figuring out what the difference between velour and velveteen was playing with fabrics. And to this day, a lot of my friends make fun of me for like how I studied. And then I actually never worked more than a summer internship at Ralph Lauren because when I got offered the full-time job, it was right when Campus Protein won a business plan competition, which allowed me to quit ahead of time before joining Ralph Lauren. So I worked in their archives department where I would work with designers who had this inspiration. Hey, I wanted to do 80s American for this whatever season. And they would come into this crazy closet of a department and I would work with the designer, pull pieces out that would align with their inspiration and help them design the line for the season. So fast forwarding it to supplements, I mean, I understand how people want to express themselves. I understand how confidence aligns with fitness and overall well-being, both on a mental level and a physical level. And I think that with Beam, I am finally 10 years later, basically going to be using this degree because I do want to come out with an apparel line, which I've been designing for months now. And it's really difficult, but it's awesome to know things, whether it's lingo, whether it's construction or patterns or all these things that I work with overseas. It's really fun because passion really doesn't die. It just changes and shifts. So I shifted my passion for being obsessed with clothes. It used to be golf before clothes, and then it went to supplements. And that's why I love ingredients. That's why I love consuming a product and having an effect on your overall being. That concept to me was what really got me so excited about supplements. You take pre-workout and you're a different person, and in the best way possible, because the ingredients that have scientific backing that are obviously safe for you allow you to be a better version of yourself. And if you're a better version of yourself, you become better over time. And I think that's just like such a cool thing. So I don't know.
Agreed. Let's go back to the founding of Beam. So you had mentioned that you had gotten sick, and then that eventually cycled into the founding of Beam. So if I'm not sure how in depth you want to get into it, but can go as far in detail as you want to with it.
No, I'm an open book, and I love that because it allows me to impact others. So let's rewind to summer of 2017. I was just trying to figure out what this brand was going to be for this Campus Protein X. I had no idea. All I knew was that I saw in the industry some flaws that I wanted to correct. Intimidation with supplementation. I didn't like exclusion. I'd rather have inclusion. I didn't like the pink text that was happening for female users, especially as you could see the data climbing that they're using more and more supplements. So what I wanted to do was to go after a brand that would kind of solve all these issues. Didn't have a name, didn't have really formulas kind of done. What I did have was my 10 years of experience. And the second thing I had was this cough. I got this cough and I didn't know anything of it. I had 8% body fat. I was in the best shape of my life. I was 27 years old. I was fine. And what they always say not to do is don't go on WebMD and look it up, because they gave me three options that weren't good. And I was just like, all right, I think I'm good. I think it's just pneumonia. So I ended up getting an x-ray, and WebMD was right. They found three tumors in my chest, my shoulder, and then wrapped around my esophagus. And I was in chemotherapy within, I think, a week. This guy in my chest was the size of a grapefruit. I could not breathe. Every time my lungs expanded, I would cough, and that's where the cough was from. And the doctors were extremely positive. It was a rare form of cancer, but they said that the chemotherapy that they were using has a 90% chance of being effective, to the point of curing me, not even putting me in remission, within 6 months. So I put my head down. I didn't tell anybody. Only my business partners and family knew, and tried to go to work, tried to work out, tried to stay as positive as possible. 6 months went by. I failed the chemotherapy. I was in that 10%. So I had to kind of make my fight a little bit more public, made an announcement, and we ended up using my announcement personally to raise money for cancer research. And in 12 minutes of me announcing my fight, I raised over $25,000 for cancer research. This was the inception of me understanding what my impact could do. I was never a philanthropic person. I was Campus Protein 90% of my life. I was just trying to build a business. And cancer was the best thing that ever happened to me. And this was one of the first experiences of proving that with otherwise like perception and so many other gifts. So let's fast forward. I failed two more clinical trials. I failed three chemotherapies, to the point where my hospital at the time had no idea what to do. I ended up switching hospitals to MSK or Memorial Sloan Kettering. They believed at that time to do a rare radiation treatment, followed by a chemotherapy, followed by a stem cell transplant, which is basically a new immune system. Mm-hmm. The chemotherapy went on to save my life. It put me in remission for now 2+ years. I'm officially completely done with scans, anything cancer related other than giving back. And the name of that chemotherapy, the acronym, was BEAM. So that's where the name BEAM comes from.
Hmm. That's amazing. I mean, for listeners of the show, I mean, no, we know that we've talked about Lucas's mom struggles, fighting cancer. She's been kicking ass. I haven't made as much public, but I mean, I mentioned to you, both of my grandmothers have had it. My grandpa died from leukemia back when I was 7. I mean, cancer is a vicious, vicious son of a bitch that affects nearly everybody. So the fact that you are 2 years clear of it, that's amazing, man. That is awesome. Let's just embrace the mindset that you take when you're going through this, because it can be like you got knocked down multiple times along the pathway, and then you kept getting back up, which a lot of people are that first time saying, hey, I've got a 90% chance, and then they come up with nothing. That could be a serious kick to the baby maker in that instance, where they lose all moral compass and want to keep driving forward. So what sustained you through that? What allowed you to power through it?
Honestly, the mindset is when you're in these situations, the analogy that I give to people is that a gun was pulled on me and I had two options. I had, you know what, let them pull the trigger and just give up or fight like hell. And I was not going to let cancer win by affecting my life. So the way that I looked at it is cancer affects the quality of your life. It will diminish certain things, energy levels. It doesn't affect your positivity. That's all on you. So what I said was, I'm going to control what I can control. And if I have, let's say, 30% of me to embrace the day, I'm going to live it at 35%. I'm not going to let it even diminish me in the slightest. So I grasped onto life versus letting the life diminish out of me in terms of energy and positivity. So what would happen is, I would, in the business world, be like, oh, I have a meeting, I have a podcast next week, like, let me prepare for it. But no, now my life is, oh, I woke up today, like, I'm breathing right now. Some people don't have that luxury. So I got to live week by week, but now I'm living minute by minute because I don't know how much time I have left. I don't know if there's going to be complications. I don't get that luxury anymore. My outlook on life is a lot closer. I'm much more nearsighted than I am farsighted. And I don't think that's a scary thing. It could be scary, but like I said, cancer was the best thing that ever happened to me. I get to experience mundane activities way more thoroughly than I used to. I get to experience relationships way more deeper than I used to. And the list goes on and on. So instead of focusing on the negative, I got to focus on the positive. And I think it's not as involuntary for everybody like it is for me. I think you get these gifts, these challenges for a reason. And I believe that the challenge of overcoming or even battling cancer at the time was given to me to overcome it. Because to me, otherwise, what's the point? It's like, if I'm not going to be able to handle this challenge, just give up. And I didn't have that option because, like I said, there's only two options.
Going into your treatment, you were obviously, you know, using supplements fairly heavily. Did the doctors, before we get into that, did the doctors ever understand what was the genesis or what caused it to begin with? Was it, you know, genetic? Was it some environmental factor or just something just kind of went sideways?
So like you, like your grandfather, I had a blood cancer, and blood cancer genetically could be linked. However, my grandfather also had lymphoma as well, but they do not believe that it's a genetic link per se. They believe it is a broken system triggered by hormones. So if you look at the data set, the majority of lymphoma patients are like 20 to 30 and like 50 to 65 because something happens in your body where like it's already broken. Like I think about it as like a fence. Your lymph nodes, the blood goes through it, it cleans it up. But something happens with your hormones where the fence isn't working and it just builds up and builds up. And it got to the point where that's how the tumor built. So doctors don't really know in terms of, is it genetics? Is it just a bad foundation in terms of your lymph nodes? I don't know. Nutrition and supplementation, I don't know if you wanted to bring this up. They don't really know a lot in oncology when it comes to nutrition and supplementation.
Yep.
I believe oncologists get like one class of nutrition. And then even the nutritionists, their philosophy is calories, calories, calories. Because when you go through chemo, you kind of shut down. You stop eating. So they're just like, get as many calories as possible. Where I got to use supplementation and kind of my experience to give myself a little bit of energy through carnitine, drink protein shakes because I can consume calories a lot faster, mostly weight gainers. I wouldn't use caffeine as much as you would think with the energy levels. Something called chemo brain happens where you get this like fog, and caffeine creates more of a headache. So I was actually not using caffeine through chemo, which is awesome for my pre-workout usage post chemo. So I use supplements, and when you're kind of going through this system, if it's $5 more for a protein shake or if it's $10 more for a protein shake, as long as it's better for you, like it doesn't matter. So that's where like Beam got this premium high-end stuff. It's just like, I don't want to like waste putting like anything bad in there. I don't want any fillers. I don't want to take any shortcuts. So we're going to put it all out there. So that's where the idea of Campus Protein and Beam kind of separates, because Campus Protein is a platform for someone who's looking for the budget deal, looking for the best value. And Beam is the person who's just like, I'm taking care of my fitness. I'm taking care of my body. I will do whatever needs to be done, and I want the ultimate experience. And that is why Beam is not on Campus Protein. That's why it's only on youcanbeam.com. And that's the like foundation of that decision.
Yeah. That was you kind of touched on what I was getting at. So you had your heavy supplement usage going in there. You've touched on that most doctors these days get a bare bones education in nutrition, even less on supplementation. By and large, my experience with doctors has been they just don't want you taking any supplements whatsoever outside maybe of a multivitamin or a B complex. Anything outside of that is, you know, hazardous or, you know, unproven, unstudied. So I was curious to see what the oncologist had said of like what you were taking in conjunction with all the rounds of chemo and radiation that you were doing, if they just warned you off of anything, or did you add anything into your own regimen that you found was especially beneficial? Because Lucas and I have touched on the cocktail of stuff that he's given his mom, and I don't want the listeners to think that we're portraying these things as they are the cure to cancer. Are they doing, this is just like a personal one-on-one anecdotal experience of things that you found beneficial when you were going through it.
Yeah. So you're going to get like, when anybody gets cancer, you're going to get those people that are like, hey man, I came across a study. If you have like 10 pickles a day, like you'll cure your cancer. And I'm like, all right. Like I'm pretty sure like the chemotherapy will trump that. Like I don't think 10 pickles is really going to do anything like that. But so it's a dangerous world if you don't know what you're doing. But if you understand, supplements aren't the cure to anything. Supplements technically should never exist. I've always said that they're called supplements for a reason. But they supplement some situations. And I think that everybody's different. At some points, I didn't take supplements during some chemos because I just didn't feel good. But the whole idea of like, if you have enough green tea, it will kill the cancer. I don't believe in that personally. And to everybody listening, green tea is a phenomenal antioxidant. They even sometimes tell you, because they don't know, kind of alluding to your question, they say don't have too much green tea when you're on chemo because it might affect the chemo's effectiveness. Yeah. So when you say something like that, you think to yourself, okay, you're not going to give value to supplementation, but you're then going to make a comment like that. It doesn't align. So I think the ultimate answer when it comes to supplementation in oncology is we're just not there yet. They're not comfortable to do studies on it, but the science is there in our world. So if you want to connect the science, I call it pseudoscience, I call it science with a conception. But it's one of these things where it's just like carnitine. It is a energy supplement. It is a fatty, brain loving supplement where if you do read some studies that they've done, there's some effects on it. So to me, I understand, the side effects. I understand the risk versus the reward. I tried it. It felt great. I would recommend it to people, but ultimately you don't need it. I mean, if you need a rest, listen to your body. But if you want to try it, try it. There's nothing that's going to be like, let's say on a Campus Protein or from an established brand like Beam, that's going to really affect you negatively during this fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well put. Yeah. There's from the research side of stuff. I mean, there's a ton of different things. You touched on green tea, which has, you know, shown in vitro and animal studies to have some anti-cancer effects. Mushrooms, which, you know, is a favorite of Lucas and mine, you know, lion's mane, chaga, reishi's got some really, really strong stuff. Curcumin's another really good one. I mean, like you said, it's up to you as an individual to figure out, hey, what do you want to try? What do you want to see? It just, there's just some really cool stuff. And that's, I think, where what's always driving me in the industry is understanding the mechanisms of how things work. Let's not make the jump to say, hey, just because we find this in a cell culture or a rat study, it's definitely going to happen. But if that pathway is there, what could possibly happen? Like, let's go down that wormhole and do some personal experimentation.
Yep. And that's the thing. I mean, understand that doctors know one thing. They know chemo. They don't know holistic. They don't know supplementation. And there's really no authority for that when it comes to this, which I think in the future there will be, because I don't think mushrooms or green tea is curing cancer anytime soon. But if it does increase your odds at 1%, why not do it? Because my odds went from 90%, which anybody would take, to 30%, which still anybody would take. You give somebody 30% with pancreatic cancer, they're going to take that every day. So
absolutely,
all you need is 1%, because at the end of the day, cancer or oncology is going to put you in a box, but ultimately you're an individual and you're going to fight like hell to make sure that you're there for your loved ones, to live your life and do all these things. So if it can help, I think it should be explored and I think it should be tried as long as you feel comfortable. It's an individual battle. So it should be an individual decision.
Well put. Let's transition over to Beam and get a little more in depth into the products and the formulation. And so what was the initial product you've launched? I mean, I've heard amazing things about the vegan protein from several people. So we can go through the products one by one if you want to. And Lucas, if you got anything, feel free to jump in, man. I don't want to dominate all the questions here.
Yeah, no worries. I'm just following the ride. So yeah. let Mike introduce his line, and if I will have questions, I will definitely ask. Yeah.
Awesome. You want to start with vegan?
Sure.
Sure.
Let's do it. So vegan is basically our flagship product because we just went after. So basically with every product that we came up with, we just wanted to protect the consumer. So we looked at like the industry. Okay, vegan protein. What does the consumer get screwed on? Vegan protein usually tastes chocolatey, tastes like crap. You have to sacrifice if you want to choose to be vegan. So our goal was to write on a whiteboard, probably behind us, make sure it doesn't suck. Like that was our idea. And the way that we did that was we used two patented ingredients. One, smooth protein, which is in the name. It smooths out the protein, so it's not that like dirty taste. I mean, no matter what, there's grains, so it will have a grainy taste. Just using smooth protein allows it to be a lot less.
Experience, right?
Yeah, it's that mouthfeel. At the end of the day, if you put something in your mouth, like it's like smelling something. It's like it affects taste by smelling something. So if you put something in your mouth and it already tastes chalky and something that does not feel like it should be there, you're not going to have a good experience. So that's why we also added clean cream, because the best part about whey is it tastes like a milkshake. It has that cream to it. So it's a vegetarian cream, obviously. And it's one of these things where it adds to that smooth protein. Next level more, vegan protein. Okay, so when you take vegan protein, people are going to say, well, it's not bioavailable like whey. It doesn't have as much leucine as whey. Okay, so how can we combat that? One, you need to do a blend because you want it to be a complete protein. But two, we looked at like protein sources. Everybody does brown rice. Everybody does pea protein, obviously. But like, what else can we do? And we came across mung bean protein, which is a legume. And legumes have tremendous amounts of benefits. And we thought to ourselves, wait, why doesn't anybody put this in there? I couldn't find anybody that used mung bean protein. You Google it, you can get like the powder on Amazon, but I was just very confused by it. So I talked to my formulations team and I was just like, does this affect taste? And I was just like, no, it actually has way higher leucine content than anything we've ever done. I was just like, let's do it. So one, we made it taste good. Two, we made the texture good. Three, we added a ingredient that nobody else has done, plus aquamin, which is so good if you know trace minerals. And then we made it fun with blueberry muffin, with peanut butter smoothie, and obviously a chocolate that needs to be done, chocolate brownie. So we just care about the experience. We care about the customer. The products, we're going to go into depth on them, but ultimately, to the consumer that doesn't know and just wants a vegan protein that doesn't suck, we deliver.
Do y'all, when you're feeling this, what's the plan? So you have three flavors now. Is there demand for increasing the amount of flavors that you have? Or is it hard to get people that are used to buying whey protein to sell them on trying to, or convert them to trying vegan protein and say, hey, this can be, may not be identical to whey, but I mean, it's about as damn close as you're going to get to it.
So great question. And I think that that question has the assumption that our customer is a whey protein customer. And the truth is, we went into this 10 days before COVID. We had no idea that this was going to be a vegan protein customer. We just knew our vegan protein was better than everybody else's. That's all we knew. Yeah. And how are we going to get that word across? Are we going to try to convert whey protein customers? No, we just actually made thousands and thousands of blueberry muffin samples, which is such a good flavor, especially because it uses the texture as like the bread tone. So it really does taste like a blueberry muffin.
I could see that working really well.
Exactly. And like we just basically gave people such good experiences that one, they told their friends, but two, they repurchased. So what we were able to do is just create awareness. And I think the awareness is what created sales. And then now people are just like, okay, I'm going to this brand because they are the best flavors. They have the best tasting vegan protein. I want more. So if you look at our lineup, we don't have a vanilla vegan protein. So that's obviously in the works. We don't have some of these ideas that the whey protein customer has access to. So that's also in the works. So I think what we're trying to do is increase that awareness. We're not trying to compete and steal customers from either a different category or a different brand. We just want to introduce people to that unique experience that is being vegan protein.
Interesting. I'd be curious to see the percentage of crossover just in that, you know, how many people like your typical whey protein consumer, how often are they like crossing the line and just dabbling and trying out? Like, so, you know, we're almost, I would say 99.9% whey or approved whey casein blend in this household. But when companies send us vegan stuff to try, I mean, we'll go through it. I don't have any vegan stuff left over here, but I'm wondering for the average consumer that's buying protein on a regular basis, how often are the two, you know, crossing sides? Are vegans trying ways or are whey maybe, you know, having a little dalliance on the vegan side?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So it's funny that you say that, because if you ask, go out on the street and you ask someone, it's just like, what, which is better for you, whey protein or vegan protein? They're going to say vegan protein is cleaner. And I would always combat the question, what makes vegan protein cleaner? The usage of plants versus a dairy base? If you look at the ingredient profile, most vegans, not ours, but most vegans have to have a blanket full of ingredients to clean up their lack of taste, their lack of texture, and all these other things. Yeah. So it's a misconception to understand what clean is. Clean can be in any product. Our whey protein is got no fillers. It's got nothing, no additives. So it is clean, and our vegan is too. But the name is kind of what sells it. So back to your question, I think we are converting people on that misconception. So we give them a vegan protein sample in every order. So they're going to be like, okay, I'm trying their salty peanut butter whey, but I don't want to try a vegan protein. That's disgusting. I enjoy whey. I can handle the dairy. Why would I do that?
Yeah.
Sample it. You know what? It's free. I might as well. Wait, this tastes amazing. Like, and it's blueberry muffin. Like, and it's cleaner for me and it's healthier for me. So on and so forth, where we are converting people, and we are not slowing down on our whey protein. It's just going to be a different experience. You could get your vanilla soft serve whey protein, or you can get your peanut butter smoothie vegan protein. You could even mix it, because I would say the majority of our customers are not vegan in terms of their diets. They just choose vegan protein, whether it's a flavor or a choice about that misconception, I would say.
Yeah.
Mike, do you think it was a risky move from your side as far as like launching, you know, vegan protein at first and not going with whey protein as most of the companies nowadays?
So we actually launched with, so our launch was two pre-workout flavors, collagen, unflavored, and we did launch with both proteins. So we launched with the whey protein and a vegan protein. We had no idea. Risky, I think that was the riskier decision, launching with four SKUs in two different categories versus being hyper-focused. So it ended up being really good because we didn't know our customer. We knew what our brand was, and we wanted to be a brand for the masses, aka that inclusion I was talking about. But we didn't know where we were going to shift. And I think we shifted towards the vegan and the greens, which is our another top selling product, because of that inclusion. Because if you look at our branding, it's not intimidating. So we were attracting that female demographic, which is predominantly a vegan protein consumer and a greens consumer. It did cause confusion a little bit, but that's all about building a brand. I mean, I've learned more building Beam in the 6 weeks leading up to it than I did probably years running Campus Protein, just because building a brand is so much different than building a retail site with a brand DNA to it. So,
With the, since we're on the topic of protein, let's, I guess, delve into the whey protein a little bit. So you have a chocolate flavor between the vegan and the whey protein. you've got salty peanut butter, but the peanut butter is a little bit different for the vegan. And now you've got vanilla, but we don't have a vanilla for the vegan, although you said one is potentially in the works.
Potentially.
Is there any thought to it to where I guess you would have completely different flavors across? Like, I can see the benefit of having similar flavors between the two, because, hey, you know, people that are buying vegan protein want a chocolate when they want a vanilla, and people that want whey expect, you know, a vanilla and a chocolate. At the same time, I wonder, would it almost be good to have like completely different flavors for each of the two, so that if you want to combine the flavors, you kind of have to cross, or you can mix and match, or something, like you can get people to try different ones depending on the diversity and flavors that you're offering?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's one of these things where the consumer is a different consumer. So it's honestly, if I'm thinking of, and I come out with a salty peanut butter whey protein, that is no connect. It's almost like running two different companies. The vegan company is a peanut butter smoothie, which has banana tones in it. It has different flavors in it, where salty peanut butter is like a decadent ice cream where you feel like you're cheating. So we actually got the idea, the inspiration from the ice cream shop below us called Jenny's Ice Cream. And they have a salted peanut butter chocolate flake. We just didn't want to have chocolate in it. So it's salty peanut butter. It is interesting because as we grow as a brand, we start like this, peanut butter, chocolate, chocolate, but then it grows apart where it's just like this vanilla is going to be a completely different flavor tone than the whey vanilla soft serve. The funny thing is a lot of our vegan customers are like, I hear everything about this vanilla soft serve being the best tasting vanilla on the market. When are we going to get it? And it's just one of these things where it's almost like every product that we make is its own business, and we have to understand what short term we want to do and long term. So we got to build the brand and we got to get the customer. So it might be easier to come out with the lookalike flavors. They're never going to be the same. They're always going to have their unique qualities, but it's an interesting idea because if we talk in a year from now, it's going to be a completely different conversation.
Yeah, I could easily see that. You mentioned launching pretty much right before all the lockdowns and all the nonsense of the past, you know, 12 plus months have started. What, I guess, challenges have you experienced with that as far as material shortcomings, supply chain issues, or just getting awareness out on the brand? I mean, did you look at it as, I've heard mixed things. Like, there have been certain brands that looked at 2020 and said, man, this is our best year ever. Regardless, people are just sitting by the wayside and just bitching that, you know, this, that, and the other. Other people saying, hey, just the fact that we survived is a victory in and of itself. And then you had other people who just, it crushed their business and they're trying to rebuild back stronger in 2021. So how did you approach it when things started happening? And what steps did you take to not ensure success, but take those steps to be as successful as possible, regardless of whatever happens?
Well, technically, this past year was our best year yet. It also was our first year. So I don't know. I don't know if that means anything. No. So what issues did we experience? I would say all of them, literally all of them. But just because you experience them, that doesn't mean it's going to cripple your business. It's just how you respond to them. And I think these legacy brands who didn't have the brand equity, who just had POs and sales, where those sales kind of dried up, they didn't have a new customer to acquire. They didn't have a brand to lean on where there's loyalty there. It was just like, oh, I'm taking the red bottle, but I'm now not working out or I'm not going to my gym anymore. So I'm not going to be buying the red bottle and so on and so forth. So with us, we were building the brand. So we almost like we're kind of under the current where people were getting kind of taken over or people were growing. So brands that we obviously know about that had their best years yet that took it to the next level, they got to take advantage of the fact that people were staying home and still committed to fitness and health and wellness. And those people have brands. If you look at all the people that are surviving and thriving, they have brands. They don't have products. Mm-hmm. And we have that as well, but we were also building our business. So it was just adaption and kind of learning as we go, but not take too many leaps that we couldn't recover from and really just build this brick by brick, influencer by influencer, athlete, ad by ad. It was just very calculated, very short term, and made sure that we established our brand with each step that we took, with each product launch, with each decision that we made.
Yeah. How did y'all go about vetting the manufacturer that y'all ultimately ended up using? I don't know if you use one or if you use a couple, because sometimes people manufacture their protein at one facility and then do their pre-workout aminos all at a different facility, just depending on, you know, costs, flavoring teams, and whatnot. So what steps, I'm always curious from the brand owner's perspective, since there are hundreds, if not thousands, of contract manufacturers that we have access to. What steps did you take to do that? Or had you already kind of built relationships during your time with Run and CP?
So we control the whole process. So we didn't have to outsource anything. We didn't have to vet the thousands of co-mans out there. So we control sourcing the ingredients. We control the flavor house. We control the flavors and the formulations. And we control the manufacturing of it. So that's all done.
I didn't realize that. Y'all do your own manufacturing.
And that's why we put everything into the product. So with that being said, there's no middleman. So we call it farm to shaker because you need to know anything. We are as transparent as possible. And that's why, you know what, my formulas might cost a few dollars less, but I am going to put everything in it. You think those two patented ingredients in the vegan is cheap? No. We put ashwagandha in our pre-workout, like KSM-66. Like, that is not cheap, and so on and so forth. So our formulas are just not cheap. So vetting was easy. we didn't have to worry about that. But supply chain is still an issue. Just because I source my own ingredients doesn't mean I can't get creatine right now. Nobody can get creatine. I mean, we don't have creatine in our thing, but on the campus protein side, I know that creatine is like 5x its price. And when you see Glambia coming out with white caps, you know that there's an issue. I mean, a $1 billion company that can't get black caps, that is that is like the sign of, you know what, we're going to make this work. And I respect the heck out of them for that, because you know what, like, the consumer still needs their creatine. And we're going to figure out any way possible to make sure that, I mean, we just sold out of Sour Blue Gummy pre-workout. We're going to be selling out of our vegan protein, and we have no greens in stock. And it's not easy to produce it, no matter if you're controlling it or if you're outsourcing it. So the issues are real, but it's how you adapt to it is everything. And I truly believe that our 10 years of experience is the reason why we're on this call today talking about Beam surviving and thriving.
Did y'all have the manufacturing facility in place prior to starting the brand, or was that part of getting Beam off the ground? Like, were y'all doing manufacturing on the side in addition to running campus protein during that time?
Yeah, it was basically something that was in the background that we were kind of aligned with. And it honestly wasn't in 2016 when we started the idea of it. Wasn't the farm to shaker was like, it just worked. It just came to fruition. So it's the partnership of ideas and timing is what was the perfect recipe for, no pun intended, these formulas.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Very, very interesting. All right, let's delve into go ahead, Lucas.
I didn't know about, you know, your own manufacturing, so that's a big surprise for me,
So
I can really appreciate that.
Yeah. You mentioned that the brand, before we get into the pre-workout, that the brand is as transparent as possible. Is there any thought to opening up the ingredient panel for the proteins and saying how much whey protein in here, how much like we'll take, I guess we always use like Nutribio as a brand that kind of is as openly transparent. Like, so are you going to start listing out like sucralose or how much pea protein, how much mung bean protein you're using that? Are y'all kind of keeping that playing that a little bit closer to the vest so where you can kind of keep your own mixture of the vegan protein and what makes it so smooth tasting, you know, an in-house secret?
No, that's a great question. And we are so transparent. If you messaged us, we have all of our tests that we have. Like, we have it ready to go. Like, our customer team will send it to you if you want our amino acid. Nobody shows their vegan amino acid profile. I didn't know that. So I have our amino acid profile that's going to be going on the website, I believe, with the new theme next week. When it comes to our actual formulas on the bottle, we use WPI 90. So technically, if you like look at the ingredient profile, you know how much whey protein isolate we use. That's 100%. When it comes to the vegan, I think in the future, I don't think it's going to be on the bottle, but it will be on the website. We have nothing to hide. If you want to see anything, our gluten test or how much sucralose we use, the best way because sucralose is a polarizing ingredient, and we can talk about that probably for 3 days. But we use less than a packet and a half of sucralose based on like the yellow packets. Mm-hmm. And it's one of these things where if somebody wants to message us, if they're gluten sensitive, if they're celiac, we will show you the exact test. Mm-hmm. And like, I honestly didn't know, but my formulation team, that's what they're there for. They provide it. So we're extremely transparent. I love what NutriBio does. I love what some other brands do. I've even seen those other brands that are so transparent now come out and launch their brand with proprietary blends. And it's one of these things where you got to listen to the consumer, and everybody's growing. Everyone's getting better. So what we are today will not even be close to what we are tomorrow. So if that's what the consumer needs on the bottle, we have nothing to hide. We have great products, great formulas. And that's kind of just how we operate. So I guess to your answer, yes, we do plan on that if that's what the consumer wants.
Yeah, I don't think when it comes to protein that they give much of a crap. I mean, like you take the average like soccer mom off the street, you give her a tub of protein. Nobody's got like it's like the 5% of us that actually know what go into every single product that and even then I don't if I'm gonna buy a protein powder, it's gonna be from a reputable company. I know they're using either WPC-80 if it's a concentrate, WPI-90 if it's a or whatever. So I'm curious.
It's really just for the people that are in the industry. Oh, well, they only use 6 grams of mung bean protein. I mean, you know, the soccer mom 1 through 1,000,000 is not, I couldn't agree more. So if we do decide that, it's because the consumer wants it, not because the brand industry sites want it. So I don't need to compete with NutriBio, and NutriBio and what they're doing over there is phenomenal. And their consumer might want that. And I love what Jim has done to this industry with transparency. So I fully endorse it, but I actually think your reasoning is why we probably won't put it on the bottle.
No, yeah. There's no reason. And like you said, if somebody messages you or one of the team members and you provide it or you got it on the website, more than enough. It doesn't need to be on the bottle, especially with everybody walking around with like a little mini computer in their hand these days. They can
exactly fill it up
and do whatever they need to. So let's go. You're a seasoned supplement user. You trained a lot in college. You still do to this day. You are a heavy pre-workout user. What mindset did you approach when formulating the Beam pre-workout? So like this is it's got the Mike Udell stamp of approval on it. What did you want to see in there? What didn't you want to see? What past experiences did you like from pre-workouts? Which didn't you did? And this is ultimately culminates in your product that we have today before us.
Yeah. So like I said, for vegan, we didn't want it to suck. And what is the consumer experience when he takes pre-workout? There's not a lot of pre-workouts on the market that give you this experience. And the majority of pre-workouts on the market would, one, when you take it, if you can't handle that caffeine, which predominantly I'm weak with caffeine, and the female demographic is not the best with caffeine, even though they could have a venti latte and not feel a thing, they could have pre-workout and freak out. So we wanted to make a jitter-free pre-workout, and that was the most important thing. We did not want you to feel like you were cracked out of your mind, could not control your body, could not control your mind when you take our pre-workout. We wanted a zen-like feel with a ton of energy, but that wasn't overstimulating. And the next thing is we didn't want you to crash, which is the worst part about pre-workout. I remember way before they reformulated, but like Mr. Hyde, I would have the craziest workout for 10 minutes, freak out for 25 minutes, and then sleep the rest of the day. Like it was just like not a good experience. And predominantly these formulas on the market that are just going after that, I want to wake you the F up, like they don't have a great experience long term. Yeah. So for our initiative with this pre-workout is we wanted to create an incredible formula on the performance level, but we really wanted to nail the jitter-free, clean energy, zen-like feeling that is stable. And the first thing that we had to do was remove caffeine anhydrous. So we use natural caffeine in our formula that you need to digest. So if you want to wake up immediately, you're not going to get that with our pre-workout. It's going to take some time. The second thing is we use theobromine, which is another stimulant-based feeling, but it's natural. So it kind of has a thermogenic effect. So it makes you feel something. And then we use that KSM-66 to be the adaptogen that doesn't let your central nervous system overstimulate. So our pre-workout is going to be a clean energy. We're never going to be the guys that if you take 2 scoops, you're going to be like balls off the wall, like going nuts in the gym. You're going to feel great. You're going to feel clean. And then the third thing is we want to make it customizable. So predominantly beginners, females, people who have low stimulant tolerance, they want to go that 100 to 200 milligram of stimulants. And that's why we do a 1 scoop, 2 scoop. So it's funny because when we did come out with it a year ago, all like the reviews are like, it's a low stim pre-workout. Because if you do 1 scoop, it is it is 125. And if you do two scoop, it's 250. Yeah. But now if you look at the formulas that are turning into their second versions and their newer versions or whatever it is, you're seeing that that caffeine is not going north of 300 anymore. It's more of the natural caffeine versus anhydrous. Pretty much everyone is switching now. And people are now understanding that the key to a good pre-workout is not waking you up. It's getting you to that workout and giving you that workout. And I think we deliver on our other clinical dosages, whether it's the betaine, it's the beta-alanine, and the several other ingredients that we do. But everything in our formula is ratio-based. It's not clinical-based. So the theobromine to the caffeine is a ratio. The other ingredients, whether it's the beta-alanine to the betaine, some of them are clinical, the 3.2 grams for beta-alanine. But ultimately, it's 10 years of experience. Many more than 10 years of experience into that formula. And I think that's like the slow growth to this product. So we were talking about this earlier. We came out with pre-workout. The formula has not changed. And it was successful. I mean, if you took pre-workout and you were going to give us a chance, you tried it, you either said it was a good pre-workout, you felt great on it. I don't know if you're a repeat customer. But then when people kind of went off of it, they came back. So we saw a lot of people buy initially, maybe tail off 2 or 3 months, and then come back. And then we started building the brand, getting newer and newer customers. People understood that you start with one scoop. When you hit that two scoop, it's like a completely different experience. And then in January of this year, we launched our sour blue gummy flavor that catapulted our brand. Not only did it open up the opportunity for people to be like, oh my God, sour blue gummy is an incredible flavor, it then introduced them to this now very unique formula for the industry, or less unique now because people are changing their formulas. And it basically sold out, and we don't even have sour blue gummy anymore. So it's a really exciting product, because just like the brand, I know there is something there. It just, it's going to take some time for people to be aware of it and learn about it. And I think that's going to be the reason why we're here for years to come. Not because we did something really quick and easy in the first year of our business.
Yeah. Sour, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say just, yeah, and then you can jump in, Lucas. Sour blue gummy is a flavor that I haven't seen. Maybe, I don't know if Lucas has seen either. Is it a combination? You can describe it for the listeners out there that may not have been tried. So, like, I've seen blue raz, which is the bane of my existence. I wish that flavor would just go away permanently. I've seen like
blue data. Lemonade. Data would argue otherwise.
Yeah, I agree. I realize I'm the weirdo that doesn't like the flavor. I fully own that. Blue, like I've seen electric blue lemonade, which is kind of like a combination of blue raz and that. So, is sour blue gummy? Is it like a sour blue raz gummy bear flavor, or like can you kind of dive into what? You don't have to give away like the exact flavor and profile, but just it kind of explain what it is.
No, you want to know what it is? We went to the candy store. We bought obviously all the name brands, sour blue gummies. We bought the sour strips of sour blue gummies. We bought the rings of sour blue gummies, and we melted them. And we basically are just like, all right, we blended the idea of that flavor. Sour blue gummy is not like ridiculously sour. So a lot of people, because it's an artificial flavor, they jump up the sour. We mimic the sourness of the candies. And it was, I think it is when I see people dry scoop sour blue gummy, it upsets me because I enjoy the flavor so much that I like to sip on it. So,
I'm the same person. I'm a connoisseur of it takes me a good like 15, 20 minutes to drink my pre-workout. I'm not,
and you should enjoy
like
it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's the flavor.
I tried some nasty pre-workouts in my life, and to be honest, every time I was like sipping through all of them.
Yeah.
Just like it's like a ritual to me, you know.
Well, that's the best part about being in the industry for 10 years. You know how far we have come as an industry for flavoring, because whey protein back in the day, I mean, Gold Standard is a great product, but Gold Standard does not taste like it used to back in the early 2000s or late 2000s. And if you were around in the 80s taking whey protein, I don't even know how you even finished one cup, let alone took it for like a monthly basis. So I'm really proud of where we've come. Yeah, exactly, exactly.
That wasn't a good experience. But yeah, my question was about the flavoring system. Are you a fan of limited releases, you know, such as many companies are doing, you know, on a monthly or like half a year basis. You know, they are releasing a limited edition flavor, and they are keeping it in stock till it gets sold out, and then they move to another flavor, something like this. Or you like a permanent flavors?
No. So I look at that as called the hype model. So you build up a lot of hype for a flavor, it sells out, and then you either discontinue it or you bring it back. So what do I feel about that? I actually understand. So I love fashion. So it's the sneaker culture. It's the hype culture where if you can build up the excitement, yeah. So I think if you have the brand, so obviously the best in the business is Ghost. I think they do a phenomenal job building up hype, whether it's a collaboration with their influencers or if it's a collaboration with their licenses. And if you have the hype, if you have the brand equity, you 100% should do it. There is trade-offs with everything, and the trade-off is upsetting customers that don't get it. But you create that mindset of, hey, you got to act fast. It helps build the brand because then people can align the brand with that product. So with the time, with the place, and with the right brand, I agree with it. But if everybody's just launching a pumpkin spice during fall, I don't think it does that much. Come out with a pumpkin spice, like that's fine, and have a product launch for pumpkin spice. Yeah. But don't make it like people are waiting in line and then artificially sell out. I mean, we know who's artificially selling out, who's actually selling out. And I think those are the people that are pushing the brand forward versus just getting a quick short-term solution to sales. And if your limited releases are a long-term mindset, then I completely agree with it. If it's short-term and you need money quick, I disagree, because ultimately it's not going to do justice to the brand.
There's a couple of things I want to ask. I'm going to stay focused on the coffee berry thing. All right, so I'm looking at the caffeine in the pre-workout, and it says from coffee berry, whole coffee fruit extract, and green coffee beans. So coffee berry, for the listeners out there, is sold or licensed by Futraceuticals. They're also the same people that do Neurofactor, which is one of my favorite nootropic ingredients, which comes from whole coffee fruit. So I don't know if you know this answer, Mike. If not, I'm going to end up reaching out to Futraceuticals. But the coffee berry, since it has the green coffee beans, which was where the caffeine's coming from, and it's got whole coffee fruit extract, is there some Neurofactor in there as well? Do you know of any of that by chance?
So I think the chemical breakdown of coffee berry is going to have a similar effect, but for them to file a patent on two different ingredients, there has to be a distinguishing factor. So it could be the preservation of the two ingredients. It could be the mechanism where they give it to you. I don't know that answer, and I would love to know that answer too. I do know the effects in terms of the experience. It is a nootropic feeling, a zen feeling on our pre-workout, because it is that like laser focus, but it's not the laser focus with your heart racing. It's a very calming effect, which is, people look at our ashwagandha or KSM-66 and they look at some of our ingredients that they think that's going to make them fall asleep during a pre-workout. But it does the opposite effect when you have the stimulants with it. So understanding our formula and nerding out about our formula could almost overcomplicate things. So that's why like our consumer does not care about how much theanine or taurine or any of that is in our product. And that's the best part, because we are delivering the experience to them. That's all they care about. But back to your nootropic question, I don't know. And I think that's a phenomenal question. Just based on how patents work, I think there has to be something different.
Yeah, there's got to be. I mean, it's interesting just because that could almost be like a twofer ingredient. Like, so you're going to get the BDNF boosting benefits from the whole coffee fruit, and then you're getting the caffeine from the green coffee beans. I don't know. I just, That gives me some ideas for down the road.
Well, CC me on that email.
I'm definitely going to. Actually, if you got a contact at Futraceuticals, I haven't talked to them one-on-one in probably a year or two.
Yeah.
We'll get a group chat going with them. That'll be all right. I got some ideas. All right, interesting. All right. Anyway, moving on. Along the lines of selling out, you guys did not release an immune supplement when the rest of the planet was releasing immune supplements in May and June and July of last year.
Yes.
Any thoughts on that?
We don't react. We are proactive. So the way that we operate our business, whether it's on a philanthropic level or a product level, just because It's in the now. I'm not going to come out with a vitamin C supplement. It's not on brand. So ultimately, we're building a brand here. And the way that we look at our brand is we look at everything long term. So short term, if it doesn't have an impact on the long term, it's not going to happen. So we didn't know if this was going to be a long term thing. And I think immunity is huge. But our products will have immunity factors to it. It won't be a selling point, just like our aminos have hydration in it, and it's a phenomenal complex there. We're not gonna just come up with a decision based on what the current climate is. We're gonna look at the current climate. We're gonna see where it's trending. We're gonna use data. We're gonna make sure that we protect our consumer. And we're gonna let those other brands that are trying to make those quick decisions, those pumpkin spice brands, let them run with it. I mean, that's not the business that we're in.
I like that. The pumpkin spice brands. I think I'm going to have to steal that.
Take it.
Turn a phrase from you. The pumpkin spice brands. what new releases do you have lined up coming this year?
So that's top secret information. I don't know if I can give you that. But
teasers,
I can
maybe?
Tell you.
Teasers?
No, yeah. It's my pleasure. So right now we have greens, we have vegan, we have whey protein, we have pre-workout, and we have collagen. And then we have potentially other products that are coming out. So what I can say is that right now we are completely sold out of greens, and we have a product launch coming the 28th of this month. I'll just say that. Then following this month, we will have at least one, maybe two product launches or flavor launches each month, paired with accessory launches, paired with apparel launches, and then potentially new product launches or new category launches. Last month we launched an amino product, and it's called Recovery Aminos. And the truth is that if you look at this industry, you kind of see everyone fighting BCAA versus EAA. It has to have either BCAA or EAA in the name. But the ultimate way that we look at products is protect the consumer. And what is the consumer dealing with? Are BCAAs good enough? Are EAAs better? No. We'll give you the exact same amount of BCAAs that everybody else has. We'll also give you EAAs, but we're making you a recovery product. We are making you a product that will better you on the recovery level using those ingredients that everybody is combating over. So then we paired it with some incredible antioxidants and an insane hydration system to really ultimately give them the best experience. And the last and the final frontier is the flavors. If you taste our amino acids, I mean, we know amino acids can taste really bad. It is a different, it's a different playing field. Like, people do not flavor aminos the way that we do, because we had to spend a lot of money on the flavoring part of that product. But with our inspiration, with we call them fruit fusions, it actually, some people even comment on the review section that it tastes like juice. That's how good the flavors are. So we want to make sure that if you're taking a recovery product, you're enjoying it because it's stem-free and you're going to be sipping on it all day. And that was what we led with. And then the formula is kind of on that back end. You're going to get an incredible experience on the formula side as well.
Yeah, I like strawberry, peach, and mango twist. I like those flavors are intriguing. And anything tropical, I'm a sucker for. So those are those sound.
You know those Dole like fruit fusion juices where like you look at the bottle and it has like the cut up fruit. That's literally where the inspo came from. I was in the grocery store and I was just like, oh my God, strawberry peach sounds incredible. And then you look at the calories and you're just like, okay, that's okay. I don't need 150 calories just to enjoy strawberry peach. So that's why I made the aminos.
There you go. I've got a few fun off the wall questions for you. But before we get into that, Lucas, you have any other on topic, hard hitting questions for Mike?
Yeah, I just got one question as far as the recovery. Because I think that, you know, many companies are missing the mark as far as like the using the term recovery. Because, you know, to me, not only as a consumer of the supplements, but also like, you know, I'm in this industry for many years. And do you think that the recovery should be more about like a sleep instead of using, you know, amino acids as a main tool to recovery, you know?
So I think everybody who knows bodybuilding or working out knows that you recover in your sleep. So if everybody understood that, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, no supplement other than a sleep supplement should be a recovery supplement, because that's the only time you're really recovering, when you're when your body goes into the REM cycle and your body breaks down tissue and so on and so forth. So in a perfect world, you're right. But we look at the consumer. So the, what does the consumer look at when they take aminos? They look at a recovery supplement. And technically, recovery should have carbs in it because we all know you need carbs. But ultimately, that's not what the consumer wants when they want to recover. So they want to get their carbs from their diet. We believe that we can supplement the recovery process with our supplements. And that is literally the foundation of why we called it recovery aminos. So yeah, I actually do agree with you.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Robert.
Okay. All right. We're going to go least favorite and favorite exercise in the gym.
Least favorite cardio. I mean, who likes that? My favorite, I would say anything with chest, just because it's like the easiest answer. But the truth is that I now do like workout classes and like the fitness boutique studios, and I miss chest day more than anything. So sometimes I take days off and I go to the gym and do chest day. So I actually can validate that I'm not just everybody. It's just like, come on, it's the best to feel that pump.
There you go.
It makes you feel good.
Vegetables, yes or no? This is a direct
broccoli.
Shot at Shane.
All day, every day.
What'd you say?
Broccoli, yes. All the time.
There we go. There we go. I'm clipping this instead to get to Shane.
I'm stuck recording.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can take my green supplement all the time and kind of justify not having it, but I genuinely enjoy a crunch, and I genuinely enjoy feeling better about myself. Broccoli all day.
There we go. Validation right there. The rest of the final scoop crew can suck it.
I'm alone.
Favorite carb source.
Favorite French fries.
Archie carb source. There we go.
Yeah. What'd you say? I had waffle fries last night.
Okay.
French fries. You mentioned.
Yeah. Oh yeah. French fries. Yeah. I mean, I could be 3% body fat, 4% body. I could be the best bodybuilder in the world, but you put a French fry in front of me, no chance. No chance.
Okay. All right. All right. Here's the one I've been saving. So, got your fashion background. My wife did modeling in high school and her early couple years of college. She loves the show Project Runway and The Devil Wears Prada. Do you watch those shows? Have you watched those shows? Do you enjoy them?
Project Runway, no. Devil Wears Prada, of course.
Okay. All right. There we go. Yeah. She loves Heidi Klum and what's the guy's name on there? I forgot his name. I don't know.
Seal? I don't know. Maybe she,
no, was, she was married to Seal, I think. Yeah, so, whoever the co-host is on Project Runway. Whatever.
I have no idea. Yeah, but Devil Wears Prada, I definitely seen. And I'm not ashamed of it. I actually thought it was a good movie.
No, she's made me watch it too. So I've seen it. I've seen it once, maybe one and a half times. I don't know. She always watches that movie. She loves it. So I've seen it at least one time. Yeah, I'm not afraid to admit that either. It's not something I'm going to publicize, but if somebody asked me, I said, yeah, I've seen it. I mean, I'm married, so you got to watch a few of those kind of movies.
Yeah, you're dating you're married to a former model, so you did something right.
I guess, yeah, I mean, you know, that works. I mean, it was, yeah. Although if you met her in person, you wouldn't, just personality-wise, you wouldn't get that at all. She's such a spaz, but in the best way possible. Oh man, Mike, this has been a blast, man. Anything else you want to touch on before we put a bow on this thing and send it out the door?
No, I had an absolute pleasure in talking with you guys. This was so much fun. Definitely want to do it again whenever you guys want. I really appreciate you guys having me. This was a good time.
Absolutely. Feel free to plug anything and everything you want unashamedly and unabashedly.
Well, just check out Beam at youcanbeam.com. That's all I want you guys to do.
Awesome.
Perfect. Awesome. Lucas, thank you for riding co-pilot on this recording, my friend. Mike, it was great to meet you, spend some time with you on the podcast. Best of luck growing the brand, and we'll stay in touch, my friend.
Thanks so much, guys.
Right, bye.
Take care, Mike.